We have been studying the book of 1 Peter, or the letter of 1 Peter. Peter wrote this letter. So many of you already know this because I, you know, kind of repeat it week after week. But Peter is in a Roman prison, and he's spent 9 months, six stories underground in a 600-year-old Roman prison. He's tied, chained to another guard. You know, they shifted off, but took shifts. But he's chained to a guard. And during those 9 months that he's in this prison, six stories, just imagine, six stories underground in a 600-year-old prison. And we're not talking modern American prisons. If you've had the opportunity to go to a modern American prison, this was not like that at all. And what we know from history is at least 47 people came to trust Jesus during Peter's time, during those 9 months. Many of them were baptized in water that collected in low indentations. You know, can just imagine the low indentations in this floor after 600 years. And water collected and people were baptized, even though he's in prison. So while he's there, he writes this letter. Silas is, we may see Silas at the end of our time together today. We may not, just depending on how fast I can talk. We may get there. But Silas was his secretary, one of the early leaders in the church. He was his secretary, and he wrote this letter, and he dictated this letter, and it was being dictated to both Jewish people who had begun to follow Jesus as the Messiah and Gentiles, which is non-Jewish people, who also had began to follow Jesus. And because of their following of Jesus, they were scattered then kind of across the Roman Empire. And he's writing to those that are in the region of what today we call Turkey. And some of them have already abandoned the faith. So they've already said, you know, this is too hard. I can't do this. And so they went back to their Jewish way of life, or they went back to whatever their pagan god was, and which was all acceptable. And so it's almost like, and he's trying to encourage them to stay strong, stand firm, don't give up, don't turn back, just keep one foot in front of the other, just keep moving forward. He might have been saying something like, this is kind of my capsule of what he was saying. You might be going through a difficult season right now, but what you have received and what you have to look forward to is exponentially greater than any trial you might be going through right now. You might be going through a hard time, but you know what? What is ahead is exponentially greater than anything you could imagine. So just hang tight. Keep going. Keep pressing in. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. This is going to be fun. So sometimes I beat up on you. Today's not going to be a beat up on you day, okay? So just take a deep breath and go, I need one of those where Pastor Matt doesn't beat up on me on a Sunday. So I'm excited. I'm encouraged. Father, speak to our hearts today. Open our ears, open our spirits. Accomplish what you're wanting to accomplish today. And help me, Jesus. You know I need your help. In Jesus' name, amen. So here are the verses. I'm just going to read them out loud to you. They're up on the screen. Here's what he says. We're starting in verse 8 of chapter 1. You love him even though you have never seen him. Though you do not see him now, you trust him and you rejoice with a glorious, inexpressible joy. The reward for trusting him will be the salvation of your souls. Next slide. This salvation was something even the prophets wanted to know more about when they prophesied about this gracious salvation prepared for you. They wondered what time or situation the Spirit of Christ within them was talking about when he told them in advance about Christ's suffering and his great glory afterward. Keep going. They were told that their messages were not for themselves, but for you. And now this good news has been announced to you by those who preached in the power of the Holy Spirit sent from heaven. It is all so wonderful that even the angels are eagerly watching these things happen. I'm going to do something a little bit different today. I'm going to start at the end and go backwards. Look at this verse. It is all so wonderful. It is all so amazing. It is all so incredible. I mean, you can just put all kinds of words in there. It's all so fantastic that the angels, that angels in heaven, that angels scattered wherever they are and, you know, in the whatever heaven is, they're eagerly watching these things happen. Isn't that a great line, great verse? I mean, it's just, it's so incredible, so amazing, so spectacular. Do you get the idea? I mean, it's just like, wow. I don't think you get it. I just don't think you get it. I mean, it's just so the words fall short describing how amazing it all is. And that's what he says. The things happening are fantastic. They're so wonderful. And the angels are eagerly watching. Just recently, Barbara and I, had the opportunity or the blessing of going to see Daryl and Brenda's son, Caleb, get married. And, it's like most weddings. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful wedding. But as everybody's anticipating the wedding starting, everybody's sitting, kind of like you're sitting right now. And when the music starts, what does everybody do? They all turn around to watch the wedding party come in. And they watch this bridegroom and then this bridesmaid come in and then the flower girl and the maid of honor and, the whole thing. And everybody's looking. Everybody's just excited about all that's going to happen. Waiting on what? The bride. And then the bride comes and like everybody, I mean, everyone's eagerly waiting the arrival of the bride. You've all been there and had that feeling. And if you've had one of your kids that you've been, been involved in their wedding or they, been there. I mean, you, even as a parent, it's even more so. It's like, oh, here it comes. Here's what's going to happen. About 15 years ago, we were sitting around eating Christmas dinner, and all of our family, except for our son Nathan, his wife Kelsey, and Kelsey's mom Beth. And it was Christmas Day, and we're all sitting around eating, and you put all the stuff together. I mean, there was a whole crowd of people there, and we're sitting down to eat, and just get started digging into the food, and Ken's phone rings, and it's Beth at the hospital, and says, he's been born. I mean, we dropped everything. I think we put the food away, I think. But we just got in the car, jumped on the ferry, and we were over to the hospital in a short period of time because we were all just eagerly waiting on the arrival. Does everybody get that's what he's saying. He's saying these angels, they're looking down and they're eagerly watching, waiting for this thing. And he says, it's all so wonderful. So what's all so wonderful? Isn't that the question that comes? He says it's all so wonderful, but what's he talking about that it's all so wonderful? Well, let's go back. Here's what is so wonderful, and it's the salvation of your souls. He says you love him. This was the very first place we started. You love him even though you've never seen him. Though you do not see him now, you trust him, and you rejoice with a glorious and inexpressible joy. And the reward for trusting him is the salvation of your souls. Now, in the Western world and mostly most places around the world, the idea of the salvation of your souls is about heaven. That we get to go to heaven. We're rescued from hell and rescued from, the penalty of our sin. And we get to spend eternity with God in heaven. That's what people see as the salvation of souls. So you'll hear someone say, and maybe you don't are new to this whole thing, and so may not put all the pieces together. But someone will say, "Well, I got saved in 1979." Was a word. That's how people used to. I mean, they don't so much anymore. But they say, "I got saved in 1979." Saved? What in the heck does that mean? And what did you get saved from? And then people are like, "Well, I got saved from hell. I got saved. So I'm going to go to heaven." And that's kind of how people look at it. They'll say, "Yeah, I was headed to hell and I got rescued," So even with that idea in mind, at a lot of funerals, and probably a couple hundred funerals that I've done or whatever it happens to be, this verse has been read. It goes like this. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying." The idea that we get, we die. I mean, we breathe our last breath here on the planet as disciples of Jesus, but in a flash, I don't even know if it's a flash. It might be a micro flash. We are in the presence of the Lord. That's what the Bible teaches. And that's the salvation of our souls. That's all true. But the idea of salvation is so much more than that. So much more than that. Well, I got my ticket punched to heaven, you know, kind of thing. And it's so much more than that. They're biblical. They're true. All those things I just said. But salvation is this, it's not a ticket to heaven. It's a whole package of things that Jesus wants to do in people's lives. Here, I can't even list them all, but here's some of them. Like one of the first things that salvation, one of the first things that salvation includes is saving you from yourself. Because isn't the reality that sometimes we are our worst enemy? We don't need other people to mess our lives up. We can do a good job just by ourselves. We don't need other people to make you know, chaos out of relationships. We can create chaos in relationships. Everybody get it? So one of the first things of salvation is to save me from myself. That he begins to work inside of me to go, you know what? I can rescue from this craziness that you're doing right now. Because if you keep down this road, it is not going to turn out well. But I can rescue you if you'll trust me. Because what's the reward? The reward for trusting him is the salvation of your souls. So you trust him. You trust him, and he starts saving you. Now, it takes a while to save you from yourself. It'll take like till the day you'd breathe your last. Because you will be doing things till you know. Or how about forgiveness? Or change the way you think? Or deliverance from fear and insecurity? Or how about peace that comes? Or how about healing? Or how about friendship with God? Or how about broken pieces of your life put back together? Or how about transformation of from a selfish heart into a God and other-centered heart? Or what about protection? Or one of them is the assurance that whatever happens to you, God's going to be right there with you. I'm just scratching the surface of everything that's in the package of salvation. And he said, that's the reward for trusting him. Is all of those things and so much more. You know, it's like opening a present and you go, and there's more? And there's more? Is that all? Oh, and there's more? No, look deeper. There's some other stuff in there. I mean, we don't have to, you know, just for, and you guys have heard me say this, that the longer I do this, you know, pastoring and serving the Lord, sometimes the more confused I get about prayer. Because God invites us into this thing called prayer to pray when he already knows how he's going to answer the thing. And he already knows what's needed. And yet he tells us to pray. And in some ways, without prayer, there are things that won't happen. I don't get it all. But the privilege and the honor of not having to say the right words, say them loud enough, be a kneeling or standing or sitting or, you know, whatever it happens to be, that I can be driving in the car, I can be on a run, I can be laying in bed if I'm awake and praying. And God hears me. I mean, that's one of the incredible benefits of this thing called salvation, because we trust in him. Isn't that awesome? And so he says, it's all so wonderful. And again, on that assurance that whatever happens, he says this in Isaiah. He says, when you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not be drowned. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you. That's part of the package of this thing called salvation. That he says, oh, it's so wonderful. Again, this is what he says. See, salvation is not about something that happens in the future, though it will happen in the future. Salvation is today. Today is the day of the Lord. That's what the writer said. Today is the day of the Lord. Today's your day of salvation. It's not like, well, just do this and that's going to be when it happens. No, it's today. and it's at work in our lives today. He says, it's all so wonderful that even the angels are eagerly watching these things. Just think about that. The angels are up in heaven watching. Oh, they're watching. Here's how Jesus said it. He said, in the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and haven't strayed away. I mean, just imagine the angels are up in heaven. There's a cry, hey, come over here. Over here. She's going to repent. She's going to start trusting in Jesus. Come watch. And the angels, I mean, they're all looking down, you know, pulling the clouds apart or however it works. And they're looking. Yes! And it says there's more rejoicing in heaven over one who turns. Isn't that what it says? Than over the 99 who remain faithful. I mean, remaining faithful is amazing. A good friend of mine that prayed for me, actually, the night I became a believer, and then we really became friends after that, but he prayed for me. And talking about people's testimonies, you know, you get some guy stands up and says, you know, I was a drug addict, I was an alcoholic, and, you know, went through a divorce and whatever, and they tell all their whole story, and everybody claps and cheers. He said, you know what, I never smoked a cigarette. I never slept with anyone. I never stole anything. He just says, you know what? But isn't that an incredible testimony that God keeps me living a certain way? Now, it doesn't mean Larry didn't have other things in his life, you know, anger and whatever it happens to be. But all the things everybody, oh, wow, he was a drug addict and came to Jesus. It is wonderful that drug addicts come to Jesus. It's wonderful that people bound by sin and whatever the things are. But it's also incredible when people stay true to Jesus their whole life. They give their life to the Lord at 7, and at 47, they're just walking with Jesus. It's an incredible testimony. It's an incredible thing. But that's not what the angels rejoice over. That's all incredible. It's all amazing. But it's not what the angels rejoice over. What the angels rejoice over is someone who's been away from home and finally decides, I'm coming home. And they come running home, and the angels are, they're celebrating. They're having a party. That's the thing they're looking for. That's the thing that's so wonderful that the angels are longing to look on. And this promise of salvation was going to be so wonderful that kings and prophets down through the centuries talked about it, and they wondered about it. Here's some of those verses. It says, Jesus said, your father Abraham rejoiced as he looked forward to my coming. He saw it and was glad. And the religious leader said, what are you talking about? Abraham was centuries ago, and you're telling us he saw your coming? Yeah, well, Abraham was looking for the Messiah to come. Or Moses said, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him. Or Peter at the start of the church said, starting with Samuel, every prophet spoke about what is happening today. All of the prophets, Elijah, Elisha, all of them, they were talking about what's happening right now. That's what they were prophesying about. Daniel said, I heard what he said, but I didn't understand what he meant. So I asked, how will all this finally end, my Lord? Trying to figure it all out. So it's not just angels that were looking. It was kings. It was prophets. It was Ananias Anna in the temple, and Simeon in the temple, waiting for the birth of the Messiah. And when Simeon sees Mary and Joseph walk in with baby Jesus, when they see him walk in, they go, this is it. This is it. This is what we've been looking for. This is what we've been waiting for. Anna has been in their time that she was a widow for years. She was in there decade after decade after decade waiting. This is it. This is it. Or the verses we're studying today. Or Jesus says again, he says, I tell you, many prophets and kings longed to see what you see, but they didn't see it. And they longed to hear what you hear, but they didn't hear it. Or how about these verses we're studying? The salvation was something that even the prophets wanted to know more about when they prophesied about the gracious salvation prepared for you. They wondered what time or situation the Spirit of Christ within them was talking about when he told them in advance about Christ's suffering and his great glory, his great glory afterwards. They were told that the message was not for them, but for you. You know, the salvation of people's souls is so marvelous and so incredible and has been happening for 2,000 years. Because of Jesus' life, his death, his burial, and his resurrection, people around the world's lives have been being changed one after another till where today, about of the third of the world's population today will somehow gather together in various settings, whatever it happens to be, because they committed their lives to trust in Jesus. A third, 2,000 years later, a third of the world's population, between 2.5 and 3 billion people. It's just all so marvelous. It's all so marvelous and all so wonderful. I mean, we can look at our life, and I look at what God did in marvelous, amazing, incredible. What God did in my wife's life, though she didn't need as much work as me. But marvelous, incredible. Jean, don't be shaking your head. You needed more work than Carolyn needed. Okay, right, Jean? Raise both hands. Like, yeah. Isn't it just incredible and marvelous what Jesus has done? Jaroslav Pelkin, who for 34 years taught at Yale, he wrote over 30 books, most of them about Jesus. Here's what he said. He said, regardless of what anyone may personally think or believe about him, about Jesus, Jesus of Nazareth has been the dominant figure in the history of Western culture for almost 20 centuries. And he said, if it were possible with some sort of super magnet to pull out of that history every scrap of metal bearing at least a trace of his name, how much would be left? When you start, just start thinking about cities, St. Louis, colleges, St. Mary's, hospitals, you know, St. Caprini's. Or you start just thinking about all the things, the hospitals that have been created, the universities that have been created, all the things that have been done in the name of Jesus. Just the incredible things because of Jesus. I've just finished reading an article in Christianity Today. It's a great article. It's about a guy in the Congo, a surgeon who's in his 80s. And he won the Nobel Peace Prize a few years ago for his work among women, and that's what he works with, is women in the Congo, mostly women who are pregnant, and the great majority of them because of rape, because of the war that's going on in the Congo that's been going on for decades. 12-year-old girls, 7-year-old girls, they come in, all kinds of damage that's done to their bodies because of the terror of war and rape and so on. And he works with them. And right during the middle of the day, he's a committed follower of Jesus. He says, the reason I do what I've done, do, and the reason I've been doing it for 50 years is because of Jesus. And right in the middle of the day, he takes off his scrubs, he puts on his suit every day, and he walks down the street to the local Swedish Pentecostal church, and he reads the scriptures. He leads in prayer at their service every single day. Then after it's over, the service lasts 3 hours. Some of you are thinking, when's Matt going to be done? You've been here 45 minutes. They go 3 hours. You know, I'm going to go to Uganda in 1st of August again, and I mean, that's how the services are. I mean, they just go on and on and on. And then he goes back to the hospital, takes off his suit, puts on his scrubs, and goes back to work until about midnight. Then gets up the next morning and does it again. He says, and I do it because of one person, because of Jesus. I do it because of one person, because of Jesus. And the angel's looking down, and the angel's going, I mean, because I've been studying all of this and reading this article, I just think about how he's up there, and he's looking down, and he goes, oh, there he's going to do it again. You know, the angels are like, he's at it again. Because it says they're eagerly watching all of the salvation. And he's doing it because of the salvation of his soul. I think everybody gets the idea, right? But it says they're eagerly watching. So let me point to one other thing. They're eagerly watching this. People who have never seen Jesus loving him. That's what the verse said. Go ahead and throw that next slide. You love him even though you've never seen him. And the angels are looking down and they're seeing people and they're saying, he's loving Jesus even though he's never seen him. See, Peter saw him. Peter walked with him. Peter knew all about it. Paul, all those guys, they all saw him. But here's a whole generation, and now we're 2,000 years later, and it's the angels are watching people who love Jesus even though they've never seen him. They're watching people who say, Jesus is the priority of my life. He's more important than my marriage, which is really important. He's more important than my kids. He's more important than my business. He's more important than my recreation. He's more important than my money. He's more that people love Jesus even though they've never seen him. And the angels are watching it all. They're going, there it goes again. There it goes again. They're doing it. I mean, they're putting him first in the middle of everything that's going on. They're putting him first. They're putting him first. They're putting him first. Or they're also looking down and they're watching, kind of like going back to what I was just, they're kind of like, they're like a guy at a wedding that says to his wife, because he loves this woman, he says, to you I will remain faithful, and to you what? Alone. You'll be the priority. You'll be the priority. Or the angels also are looking down and they're eagerly watching when people who don't see him trust him. Isn't that what it said? It said, you love him even though you have never seen him, and though you do not see him now, you trust him. You don't see him, but yet you just keep trusting him. The cancer diagnosis comes, and you trust him. You know, the inability to get pregnant, and you trust him. Family struggles, and you trust him. The death of a dream, and you trust him. The loss of a business, and you trust him. We could just keep going, couldn't we? I mean, all the various things that people go through. And yet they just keep trusting. And the angels are looking down. There it is. There it is. They're doing it again. They're doing it again. I was thinking about this week. Bernadette, who's sitting right back there in the back row with the pink blouse on. And I contacted Bernadette and said, can I share this? And she said yes. And so I got a phone call one day, and it was from Bernadette's neighbor, and said that her husband John had just passed away. You need to go down to the house. And I was there a short period of time, I don't know, 20 minutes after he passed away or whatever. They were out working on the mailbox, and they got done working on the mailbox. John got on the tractor, drove the tractor back to the barn, and boom, collapsed, and he was gone. Just like that. And I walk in, I give Bernadette a hug, and then Bernadette says, I'm just trusting Jesus. I mean, the angels are up in heaven, and they're looking and going, no, not John. He was one of our favorite. And there he's collapsed. He breathes his last. He collapsed. And then they go, and Bernadette's trusting, even though John, just one of the worst things that someone can go through, lose, and not, and in this case, not every death has so much pain involved in it. If you've been around our church, you know what I'm talking about. So much pain involved in it. But when someone dies, boom, they're gone just like that. It's over. You know, Ron Young, a couple months ago, he's in the operating table. They're just doing a heart surgery. They lost him. You know, Mark Brinkman, boom, lost him. Those are, I mean, they're like not just stabbed 10 times. You're stabbed 100 times, 1,000 times. And I go to Bernadette's house, you know, like the next day I go over, and she's trusting Jesus. She's like, got her hands up, trusting Jesus. And the next day, trusting Jesus. Now, does it hurt? Oh, indescribable, indescribable. But she's trusting Jesus. And the angels are looking down. She's doing it. She's doing it. Can you? She's doing it. Everybody get it? That's what they're just like, wow. That's what it says, unless it's not true. But it says they're eagerly watching. They're eagerly watching. It's all so amazing that they're eagerly watching this whole thing transpire of God changing people's lives. Or another one where he says, You rejoice with a glorious, inexpressible joy. You love him even though you haven't seen him. Though you do not see him now, you trust him, and you rejoice with a glorious, inexpressible joy. And the question is, do you? Do you? Let me see. Okay, I got time. Do the angels see you rejoice with a glorious, inexpressible joy? Do they see it? Do they hear? You know, you just in the middle of whatever you're going through, that there's some joy comes flying out of your heart, some rejoicing that comes flying out of your heart. That when we sing, you know, Brenda or Sarah lead us in the goodness of God, I almost can't keep myself from crying every time they lead us in that song. You know, in the goodness of God. He's been so, so good. Luke recorded an event when the angels were eagerly watching to see how Paul and Silas would respond to a trial. It's in the book of Acts. Here's how it says. It says, one day, as they were going down to the place of prayer, we met a slave girl who had a spirit that enabled her to tell the future. She earned a lot of money for her masters by telling people's fortunes. She followed Paul and the rest of us, shouting, "These men are servants of the Most High God, and they have come to tell you how to be saved." There's that word. Come to tell you how to get salvation. Come to tell you how to trust in Jesus. And he says, this went on day after day until Paul got exasperated that he turned, got so exasperated that he turned and said to the demon within her, "I command you in the name of Jesus Christ, come out of her." And it instantly left her. So just imagine this girl, you know, she's like 12 years old or whatever. She's following him around and she's like, these are the servants of the Most High God. Listen to them. They're going to tell you how to get saved. The whole while, she's not listening to them and getting saved. And she finally like leave and like, you know, swatting flies, you know, kind of thing. And finally he just turns and says, "Out. Come out," and the demon comes out. And it says, her master's hopes of wealth were now shattered. So they grabbed Paul and Silas, and they dragged them before the authorities at the marketplace. The whole city was in an uproar because of these Jews. They shouted to the city officials, "They are teaching customs that are illegal for us Romans to practice." And a mob quickly formed against Paul and Silas, and the city officials ordered them stripped and beaten with wooden rods. They were severely beaten, and then they were thrown into prison. The jailer was ordered to make sure they didn't escape. So the jailer put them in the inner dungeon and clamped their feet in the stocks. Around midnight, when Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening. The angels are looking down and they go, "They're going after him. They're going to get him. They're going to get him. Run, you guys, run. They're going to get you." And then they grab Paul, they grab Silas, they drag him, beat him, put him in prison. And while they're in prison, at midnight, they're singing. They're singing hymns. They're rejoicing. They got this inexpressible joy coming out of their hearts. And the prisoners are hearing it, the whole thing. And he's just like, "They're doing it. I can't believe it. They're loving him even though they don't see him. They're trusting him even though they don't see him now." And listen to him. Listen. I mean, they can't sing, but listen to him. Now, I don't know if they can sing or not. One time a lady from our church, Myrtle called, actually Fielding called, it was a long time ago, but Fielding called and said, "You know, I think this is probably Myrtle's last day. And would you come down because she wants to talk to you?" And so I called Ken Schoon over, and we went down to see Myrtle, and she wanted to talk to me about something that was on her heart. And then we prayed for her, and she said, "Would you sing for us?" And we sounded like two coyotes. You know, I mean, it was terrible. It was really bad. I can't sing, but Ken sings. Ken's not here today, so I can pick on him. But Ken sings worse than I do. It was bad. Funny thing about it is, Myrtle recovered. She recovered, and she went on to outlive Fielding. I think it was all because of the coyote sing. But just this, and the angels are looking down and going, those two crazy guys, Ken and Matt, they're going to sing. But that's what he says. He says the angels, they look down and they're looking at all the things God's doing in people's lives because of the salvation of our souls. And they're just overcome with what God's doing. And he says, it's all so what? Wonderful. And you know, those, I'm going to go back to those three slides in order. This is what Jesus is looking for. And this is what Jesus is wanting to work in your life. And what he's wanting to work in my life. He's wanting to work this. You love him even though you've never seen him. You make him the priority even though you've never seen him. Or, though you don't see him now, you trust him. You're just going to trust him. You don't know what tomorrow holds. You don't know what next week holds. But you're going to trust him. I'm going to keep my hand in his. Bernadette's like, I'm trusting him. I'm just walking in trust. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know why this happened. And you rejoice with a glorious and inexpressible joy. Come on up, Sarah. You rejoice. See, these three statements are what Jesus is looking for from you. And there are three statements that describe what Jesus is trying to work in your life and mine. I asked Sarah to lead us, and I'm going to pray. And then I asked Sarah to lead us before we leave. In an old hymn, starts out, says, I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus the Nazarene. It's a great old hymn. Some of you younger people maybe aren't even aware of it, but it's a great, great hymn. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for what you've done in our lives. Thank you for what you are doing in our lives. Thank you for what you're gonna do in our lives. Thank you that salvation isn't something that is gonna happen down the road sometime. But you're doing the work of salvation in our lives and our hearts right now, here in the room and online. You're doing the work.